Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
Hi, I'm Liz Corey.
And I'm Katie King.
And this is
True Crime New England.
What's up, everybody?
Hello, welcome back to another episode.
Thank you for joining us on what I hope for you is a beautiful spring day.
I hope so, too. The weather kind of changed now that we're recording, which is nice. It was cold and rainy. The sun's coming out. The birds are singing, which you might be able to hear in the background. If not, great. If yes, happy spring.
Happy spring. You know, it's yesterday was the first day of spring officially, the 20th. Also my grandmother's birthday. So that's always how I remembered the start of spring. And man, it's almost like you couldn't even distinguish winter from spring because it's just been so warm and global warming-y. We love it here.
Warmest winter on record.
Isn't that fun?
Oh, God.
I'm going to miss having winter around. I feel like in New England, obviously, like winter really can be any time from like October to April, really. But I feel like by the time we're going to be in like our 40s, it may be like December to January will be like peak snow season.
And peak with like some flurries one day.
Occasional black ice patch, some rough driving, no more frost heaves, no more slush, just all warm all the time. And you guys know I will just be living it up. I won't be able to escape it. I'll be sweating all the time.
That's right.
It's so bad. Like I've been wearing normally like in the wintertime, I'll wear long sleeve shirts at work, right? Duh. I haven't even really been wearing those this year. It's always been short sleeves because I'm still sweating in the winter and I hate it. It's like I'm constantly in menopause at 25. I hate it. It's like, ugh, too much. But anyway, I digress. Even with the heat, I still like spring and it's been very nice so far. That kind of weather where you can go outside without a sweatshirt or a jacket. It's nice. And, you know, watching the colors kind of slowly start to come back. And the leaves on the trees. That's always nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we've been enjoying that.
Looking for little moments of joy with the impending doom.
Yeah. That's always how you got to live your life. I guess. That's really sad, actually, now that I think of it. In between the impending doom, you got to smile. I think JFK said that once.
Just like we use humor as a coping mechanism to talk about the horrendous things that happen to people, and today's episode is no different.
Mm-hmm. Our case today is tough. And again, it involves a lot of ethical dilemmas because the woman we're talking about was a powerhouse in the sense that she broke a lot of stereotypes because of her job. But then again, it just kind of crumbled all down around her. Unfortunately so. And obviously we feel just terrible for her and her family because she got treated so unfairly. But I definitely recommend sticking around for this because, man, it is very interesting. It makes you think.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Thank you to George S., who bought us 8 coffees.
Thanks, George.
Thank you, George. And thank you to Gary C., who bought us 5 coffees.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you, guys. That was both very generous of you.
Yes, we appreciate you very much. That was very kind. And without further ado, today, we will be covering the murder of Gail Miles. Katie, I'll be damned if you don't give your sources to me today.
Liz, I'll be more damned if I didn't give you my sources today.
I would just appreciate it so much, is all I'm saying.
I had information from WBUR.org, which was a phenomenal resource.
Yes.
Boston.com times 2, Boston 25 News, Patch.com, Legacy.com, and the Boston Globe.
Wonderful. I, too, used WBUR News. It was a fantastic resource. I used the Boston Globe, Boston 25 News, Boston.com, only times 1, though. And I also used an article written by the True Crime Diva, who, I must say, I have great respect for that name.
Hell yeah.
Because that's awesome. Now, Katie, would you mind doing what you do best and setting the scene for us in such a way that takes us there, truly?
Liz, I would be honored, but I also cannot set the scene without mentioning that I think you set the scene best.
Oh, stop.
But I will take it today.
Oh my gosh, stop it right now. You're so kind to me. Let's just say that we both do a great job and that no matter how good we do, there's no way we could do describing this terrible scene justice as how brutal and sad this was for Gail and her family and how devastating it is that to this day, we still don't know why it happened.
Mm. Beautifully said.
Thank you.
On December 3rd, 2011, Boston Police Officer Jose Diaz responded to a radio call for a wellness check at 8 Wardman Road in Roxbury, Massachusetts at 10:08 a.m. A concerned friend had called and requested for the check after she hadn't heard from the woman living in the apartment. Officer Diaz found that the front door was locked, the deadbolt was in place, and there were no signs of forced entry. After breaking through the back door of the second floor apartment, Jose found a brutal scene. The body of an older black female was found on the floor in the kitchen laying face up. She had been badly beaten, and at first glance, it appeared that she had been beaten to death.
Hmm.
She was pronounced dead at the scene. Boston homicide detective Garrett Mitchell stated, quote, "It tells me from my experience they were very angry, so we think the person, whoever came into that apartment, she knew that person and was allowed into the apartment." The woman was identified as 61-year-old Gail Miles. Autopsy revealed she had suffered from blunt force trauma to the head, as well as sharp force neck injuries. She also had other injuries from a sharp object to her body. She had either been stabbed or slashed across her throat in a way that was fatal in conjunction with her head injuries. The nature of her injuries, especially the beating and the wounds to her throat, indicated that the person responsible was very angry and that they likely knew her personally. And police, of course, believed this as well, especially because there were no signs of forced entry. And they thought that Gail had let this person into the apartment and locked the deadbolt behind them,
mm-hmm.
or that this person came into the apartment, was allowed inside, no signs of struggle, no signs of forced entry, and then they deadbolted the door behind them.
Right. And even though this happened in 2011, I tried to get more information about like what happened because you guys know I'm really interested in like autopsy reports. I want to find all the details to give them to you guys, but it's still considered an active investigation. So you can't find the autopsy reports anywhere. You have to be like a member of law enforcement or a member of the medical examination team. So that's all the information that is ever shared is just what Katie just shared with you, which gives you, of course, enough of a picture, but it's still like if somebody had a signature, like if it was, say, a serial killer or somebody who had killed before, like it's just not enough to maybe the public for the, I don't know, maybe the armchair sleuths to play that game. But still, I was looking for that autopsy report and I just couldn't find anything. And I was shocked to find, well, not shocked, but just surprised that because it was still considered an active investigation, they didn't release everything.
Gail's friends told WBUR that Gail always carried with her a small handgun. Police never found the gun, but told her family that nothing had been stolen from her apartment. They also told the family that the apartment had been wiped clean of any fingerprints and they were unable to recover any at the scene.
This to me was like confusing because they didn't find a single fingerprint, like not even Gail's fingerprints. Every single fingerprint in the house, everyone was gone. Every single fingerprint that could have been in that home was gone. something just doesn't seem right to me.
Mm-hmm. Gail's sister Gina stated, quote, "The only thing that was broken was a chair and there was blood on it. But we went in there and we seen that chair and I was shocked that they didn't take it for evidence. They said they found no forensic and I was wondering why they didn't take that chair. I just wish the police was more like asking me for any documentation that I might have that might help them with the investigation of the death of my sister. You know, anything that they need to see that we might have found in the house." So how the family was able to walk in there and see a piece of evidence from the crime scene with blood on it mm-hmm. that had not been taken in, that's crazy.
Yeah. And also, her sister saying they told her there was no forensic evidence. Isn't blood, forgive me, this is not my field of expertise, but isn't blood forensic evidence?
I would think so, right?
Right?
That seems pretty obvious.
Like, I just don't get it.
At her funeral, Gail's friends described her as a huge animal lover and an advocate for both animals and people. She was passionate about tenants' rights issues and worked with City Life / Vida Urbana, which was a grassroots community organization. We know at this point in the podcast, at this point in the episode even, that police drop the ball quite often.
Sure.
But especially with cases like this, you know, Gail is Black.
Yeah.
No surprise there.
Right.
Here's a little tidbit of extra information. Gail Miles herself is an ex-police officer.
What? The big reveal. Bet you guys weren't expecting that. I don't know. Maybe you were. But when I learned that this was a woman who was once a police officer, that changed a lot of things for me because why was her murder being treated so bizarrely as far as investigation goes? Could that have something to do with her murder? To me, the answer is yes. And I think you can agree, Katie, right?
Same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's very suspicious. I think her career as a cop has something to do with that for sure.
Totally agree. Totally agree. Because just a couple episodes ago, we covered an exoneration where everybody came out of the woodwork to try and solve the murder of a cop.
Sure.
And it was like his investigative team was more than anybody else had ever seen. And everybody was coming out. There were drug cops working on a homicide investigation. Like everybody was coming out to help this case of their brother in blue.
Sure.
And Gail is a former sister in blue, so you would think that they would award her the same respect and the same resources, but that is completely at all not the case.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. Truly unfortunate. And literally by no means fair.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't get it. You would think they would keep that same logic for all cops. They should, but they don't.
I will go as far to say that in my personal opinion, I feel as though if Gail were white and if she were perhaps a man, her case would probably be solved by now.
Oh, most likely. I think even if she was just white.
Agreed.
I think that would make a lot of a difference. Maybe even if she was a Black male police officer, there might be some difference. There's just a lot of factors in this case. Obviously, at no fault to Gail. Like, no shit. She can't control being a woman and African-American.
Right.
Not that those are even issues, but like those clearly affected how her case was handled. And this is 2011, still way too late in the game for those to be factors. Way too late in the game. And to be sitting here still in 2024 and having that, we can say that's still a factor in solving cases like this. It's unfortunate.
Yep.
Now, Gail Miles, by all accounts, was an outgoing person who was described as someone that if you met her, you would never forget her. And it seems that was true for a few reasons, not just because she was a cop and because she was Black and because she was a woman. That's all we've really established so far. Besides that, she loved animals and those tenants' rights that she was really into advocating for. Gail grew up in Roxbury, Massachusetts. She graduated from Brighton High School in 1968 and then went on to attend Lesley College in Cambridge, where she pursued education in teaching and in dental hygiene. Well, and for several years, Gail was a dental hygienist And that was fine. You know, she was known to be personal and a good team player. But it wasn't until the age of 34 that Gail made the complete career change that also proved to be quite the achievement. Gail began her new career of a policewoman for the Watertown Police Department in 1984. And this was monumental for both the African-American and feminist communities alike, because not only was she the second woman in the department, but she was the first Black officer as well, which is outstanding. To be two minorities and a police officer, that is no small accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
Truly very brave. You knew she faced hardships immediately and often. And that was very obvious as soon as we were reading these articles. Katie, I know you had the same experience going through all this information. It was like immediately right in your face, all this terrible stuff. Just awful. When Gail found her new career at the police department, she wasn't just looking for a change in her job, but rather a change in her life and in her family. She didn't have any children, and that's totally fine, but I think she felt she was missing a lot of things in her life, and she also maybe didn't feel as close with her family on the outside. Her training officer, Sergeant Gerard Mullen, is quoted as saying, "She really and truly believed that the police department was a great big family, that they're your brothers." And then he went on further to say that he reiterated to her that that was simply not real life, and that the police department really was not a family, and that her expectations were nowhere near what was real. She was going to be sorely disappointed. And she kept on keeping on. She had no idea what she was going to endure. She really wanted to believe she was about to adopt all these brothers who were going to have her back, and they were going to be this really big, happy family. She was going to be just, oh, this everyday life, her career and her life was going to change. And they were, but not in a good way. Her heart was pure, and she did have the best of intentions, and she did want to be a great example for the town, for African-American girls everywhere, and even so, she did acknowledge she was always fighting against herself and her department, even from the start. In a personal diary, Gail wrote, "I was hired to be fired," which to acknowledge that and feel that way as soon as you are hired is heartbreaking.
That's horrendous. And like, we've all started a new job.
Yes.
We've all been so anxious. Like, okay, I have to learn a whole new thing. Like, you have to learn the policies and get to know your coworkers. And it's very daunting and it's very anxiety inducing.
Yeah.
To feel all of that anxiety, that normal anxiety about starting a new job, plus feeling like you're already on the chopping block day one.
Mm-hmm.
That's horrendous.
Yeah.
Horrendous. And she really struggled on the job at first. Like, at one point during training, she crashed a police cruiser, totaled the car, totaled it, because she drove it into a parked plane at an exercise at Hanscom Field. And that had to have been mortifying.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder if it was just a silly mistake because she was anxious. Sure. Or like, oh my God, I really have to try and prove myself. Everyone's being really mean to me. And like, they already don't like me. My job's already on the line.
Oh yeah.
Like, when you get so worked up and like anxious, you make silly mistakes.
This happens all the time. And mm-hmm. I feel like it just seems so magnified because she was doing, you know, she was in a police car and crash into a plane. Like, that's a big deal. But like you said, Katie, that happens to all of us. Like, the amount of times, even now, I've been a nurse for almost 3 years, I can picture like during a sterile procedure where I have to open like a cotton swab for a doctor, and I snap the cotton swab as I'm opening it, and they're like, hurry up, like, you know, like, and right. You're just under pressure, and you're like, something so simple. And maybe to her, that I mean, that's a pretty big deal, but like, that is exactly what's happening right there. Everyone's watching her, everyone's waiting for her, and she's already being like, okay, like, she knows that, and she knows the people are against her, so of course she's going to be nervous. And some people are great under pressure. I am not one of them, personally, and Gail wasn't either, and that's fine.
Right.
And that sucks for her because they were always putting her under pressure.
Right.
And that's not fair. How can someone succeed when they're constantly under pressure like that and not given the proper resources to do better and get better?
Exactly. Exactly. And then she went on to fail another driving test, and then she failed a firearm exam, which I think can all be attributed back to the level of pressure, the level of stress that she was under. Mm. And, you know, she wrote in her diary or her personal papers, I was hired to be fired. Yeah. And then she also, her sister said that she got access to those personal papers, and she was so taken aback. She's like, I knew that she was struggling, but I did not know it was this bad. Like, I didn't know it was to this extent.
Yeah.
Especially because Gail was trying to reassure her sister and her family, like, no, I have a pretty good relationship with the police department. And, you know, it's hard at times, but it's really not that bad. And trying to make her family feel a little better about it. And then her sister Gina stated, quote, I found papers of all kinds of stuff that my sister was going through in her time of working there, always writing her up. Ugh. So she was getting written up for dumb things, too, which would add to the pressure.
Right.
Because you don't want to fuck up and make a silly mistake. And then if you do make a silly mistake, what is a learning experience for all of her other officers is her getting written up and punished for her.
Right. Exactly.
And then these papers that Gina was referring to and how you had mentioned earlier, Liz, these personal papers, almost like her diary.
Yeah.
It refers to almost 2 decades, which was her time on the force.
Yeah.
So since day one, extensive harassment towards Gail by the hands of her fellow officers, who she was hoping would be like her family.
Right.
The harassment was, of course, emotional, and it was also sexual, and it was also racial. Mm-hmm. Gail had been called a term that we do not use, but is another word for sex worker. Mm-hmm. She had been groped. Male officers, who are every single one except for one other person.
Right.
Were rubbing up against her, coming up behind her, grabbing her, touching her inappropriately, directly in front of her lieutenant, at least on one occasion. I know for a fact that this word was thrown around more frequently.
100%.
But directly in front of her lieutenant, the dispatcher called Gail the N-word to her face. It was like, sup, N-word.
Yeah.
Hey, N-word, how's it going?
Yeah.
And then she looked at the lieutenant and was like, did you hear that?
Yeah.
And he was like, hear what? It must have been the wind or a bird outside. Or,
yeah.
Like, he totally did not acknowledge it. He pretended not to hear it. He did jack shit about it. And it was, that just goes to show, that is your superior. That's like,
he's supposed to protect her.
Right. That's like one of my coworkers calling me a crazy term in front of the head of HR.
Right. And the head of HR being like, well, anyway, so I heard there's soup in the cafeteria today, and I was really craving some soup last night, so I'm thrilled. Like, you know, like, right. Being like, what? You're not going to punish that person for being racist to, what? Like, it blows my, this would never, you would think this would never happen today. It does. It does. Mm-hmm. But it's just, poor, and this was so often that this kind of thing happened to her. And to me, the fact that she stayed on for 20 years is insane. She endured so much. And this is just one example. And you're right, Katie. I bet you this was thrown around way more often than we know. I bet you're so right about that.
And this is all to her, like to her face, mm-hmm. going up to her and touching her. I cannot imagine what they were saying behind her back.
In 1996, Gail was a part of an internal investigation for the Watertown Police Department, where 2 police officers were disciplined. I don't know what they were disciplined with. Hard to say. They probably were like, come in the office, we got to talk to you about something. And then they got in there, closed the door, and they were like, okay, we got to make this look really good. Hang your heads. Look sad. Throw your hat on the floor. Okay. Now, when you leave the room, look really disappointed. Don't look up at anyone. And then tomorrow, act sad. And then business as usual, okay? And that's it. Like, I can't imagine any, their discipline was even remarkable.
It was totally a slap on the wrist, if that.
Right.
If that. I mean, these people go around murdering other people on the streets in broad daylight, and they don't get so much as suspended without pay.
Right.
Like, yeah. There's no way they took any of this seriously.
Right.
And for two of the officers, come on. We know it's the entire police force.
Right.
Or the department.
Oh, for sure. And so as a result, Gail was transferred to a different work group within her department, which sounds like more of discipline for her, which clearly she wasn't the problem. And not these two imbeciles, because they were disciplined, quote unquote, and that was it. And I don't see how that's fair at all. She was still obviously within her department, just with a different group. So just more opportunity for different harassment. Like, it just doesn't. In roughly 1997, there was an incident where a Watertown sergeant pointed his gun and aimed the laser sight right at her abdomen. It was like a training exercise. It was just like casually in the office. Like, it was something so inappropriate and was Gail in any real danger? Hard to say. But regardless, her coworker aimed and pointed his gun at her abdomen. Would you not be absolutely fucking frightened? The Watertown police conducted another internal investigation and they ultimately found no wrongdoing in this incident. How?
And this was crazy too, not just because this man literally in front of other people, there are witnesses to this, is pointing his gun. And this wasn't even just like a regular cop being like, oh, ha ha. This right. was the department's expert marksman.
Someone who is trained so specifically to be like the most on point guy. And here he is twirling around with his pretty guns in pointing it at Gail's stomach. What?
Right, and they even got the Massachusetts Commission Against Discrimination, otherwise known as MCAD, involved. And they, too, were like, yeah, no issue.
I can't even do
it. Yeah, he's fine. Watertown officials had no comment for our friends over at WBUR when they reached out to them for additional information about this.
Mm.
Around this time, in her personal papers, Gail had written, quote, my hair is breaking off and I'm pulling out the rest from stress.
Ugh.
And this wasn't even her, like, venting or being dramatic or just Dear Diary. This was the real deal, because around the time that she wrote that entry, she was put on antidepressants.
Yeah.
A surveillance audio recording made inside the police station was later leaked to MCAD, which eventually found probable cause and sided with Gail. But this tape and the commission's file on the case have both since disappeared.
Oh, they disappeared. That's crazy. I wonder how that happened. I don't know how things like that happen, you know? Conveniently, they end up in the garbage and then it's taken out to the dumpster because Toby had Greek food again, and so somebody had to take out the trash really fast that day, or somebody recorded over it because they wanted to make sure they had the new Billy Joel CD, you know, bootlegged. What? I just don't get it.
And it's just so crazy to me that police departments seem like this magical little area where inanimate objects just happen to grow legs and walk away. But this really only happens with certain pieces of evidence that are incriminating against, you know, the police officers themselves or the department themselves. Or, you know, it's really just so interesting that this just seems to mysteriously and magically happen.
All the time.
And only to certain pieces of evidence and stuff like that. You know, it's really interesting.
It's crazy. It's really weird how that kind of thing works out. It's just bad luck. And at so many different police departments across the world. Not world, America. Let's be real.
It's an epidemic, really.
It is an epidemic. In the year 2000, Watertown settled a civil lawsuit for $150,000. As a result of this, the entirety of the police department had to attend an anti-harassment training course. This, of course, was in conjunction with behaviors that were alleged towards Gail, and it's not really clear whether it was based on a specific incident, but it seems related to the gun incident and really everything she's been through. And I have no doubt in my mind that this just made her coworkers more pissed off at her, because now they had to sit through something where They had to basically watch probably stupid videos and do these little tests about why you shouldn't comment on the size of your coworker's butt and why you shouldn't point a gun at your coworker's throat and stupid stuff that they should know and that they do know and that they're going to be complaining the whole time that they know already and that they would never do. And then they're just going to be pissed at Gail because it's all her fault. And I know for a fact that's what every single one of them was like. Oh, come on, man. I could. This is so boring. Oh, no doubt in my mind.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And then probably before the training course, during the training course, and after the training course. Oh, Gail, this is all your fault. And we had to do this stupid thing because of you. And if only you kept your mouth shut and we were just joking. And you can't take a joke because you're a woman and yada yada, like just being really awful.
Yep, 100%. 100%. And so in 2000, that same year of the settlement, the police chief of the Watertown Police Department, his name was Chief DeVoe, he sent Gail a letter in which he told her that he essentially was filing an application for her, quote, involuntary retirement. He claimed that she was unstable and unfit to be a police officer, and clearly was trying to get this fighting force out of the department so he could have some peace and quiet. And he was clearly sticking up for his boys in blue, that is for sure.
Gail was kind of a badass during this. She was like, no.
No.
I'm not going to, you think almost 20 years of harassment, and you're going to get rid of me with a letter? And so she and the police department negotiated. And by negotiated, she asked for what she wanted. They said no.
Mm-hmm.
She kept asking. They said no.
Yeah.
Finally, they came to the agreement that over the next 2 years, she would use up all of her accrued time off before she finally retired in 2004.
Wow. And it's no secret she was pushed out of her role as a police officer. I don't think any of us have to go over that because she went through years of harassment and she used her voice to fight back. Clearly, she filed the lawsuits. She tried to stick up for herself after so many incidents. I mean, not even just being like sexually, racially, emotionally harassed, having a gun pointed at you close range, even as a fucking joke. That's not funny. That's not okay by any stretch of the imagination. It's just not. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're a police officer. I don't care if you're a sniper and it's your buddy next to you who's also a sniper. It's just not funny. It's not okay. So she kept fighting and fighting, but the men in her circle were just too powerful. And they always will be. That's always going to be how it is. And they won. They essentially won because she was essentially forced to retire in 2004 because she was not that old,
right?
At all. She was 61 in 2011, right, when she died. So I'm not going to do the math for you guys right now because it will be inaccurate, but mid-50s, come on. I mean, in a perfect world, that would be a great age to retire. Love that. But no, it wasn't because she wanted to. It was because she was forced to because of the harassment and because of how unfairly she was treated.
Over the next 7 years, Gail's life was filled with the loss of a husband, her home, pets, and members of her family. Gail's sister Gina said that Gail always rescued animals and had a bunch of pets. We know from earlier in the episode that she is an avid animal lover.
We love that.
She rescued cats, dogs, ferrets, and at one point had a parrot.
Love that.
And she would always take in strays. She often had up to 10 cats at a time and would find loving homes for them. Her friends would hit her up. Hey, do you have any cats available? I'm looking for one. And she'd like, yeah, come on over. Take your pick. I have 11 right now.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. She just. I love her. It's awesome.
She was known for going on walks in Franklin Park with her pet parrot on her shoulder.
My girl.
The bird eventually flew away and never came back.
I read that, and that was one of the saddest parts of the story for me, and I don't know why, because it just made me so upset and made me think, like, someday I will have a parrot. And listen, Elijah doesn't really listen to our episodes anymore for some reason, so he'll never know that I say this, but he has no choice. We're getting a parrot someday. And because of this, I'm never going to take it outside. Because what if it does just get up and fly away? I can't stand the thought. And I bet she was devastated.
Absolutely. That was like her child.
So sad. And those things are expensive. They are. They're expensive pets. They live a very long time.
Yeah.
And you have to write them into your will. Like, they live a long time. And she was such an animal lover. Like, exactly like you said, her sister and her friends, you know, after she died, were all saying that, like, she constantly had so much in her house. And then there was one instance where her hairdresser or something was like, oh, maybe I could take one of your cats. And then she was like, well, no, you can't do that. Then I would only have three left. Yeah. And I was like, I love this woman. Because three is just so far too little cats. I love that.
So funny. Her hairdresser, Jacqueline Myers Gay, called her a zoologist.
Love it. It's great.
Gail's sister said that she thought that Gail was using the animals as substitutes for the family that she always wanted. She stated, quote, she wanted to love something other than the animals, but she thought she could have something that didn't belong to her, though, because the kids could not be hers. And in this, she's referencing a later custody battle, and this ended in Gail and Gina not speaking for years and years and years, because Gina was looking for custody over her own grandchildren, or it was up for custody. There was some kind of custody dispute around Gina's grandchildren, and Gail desperately wanted to adopt these grandchildren.
Yeah.
And Gina was like, no.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. Yeah. For whatever reason. And they got into a really big dispute. And, you know, I guess Gail, per her family, was known as someone who could really hold a grudge.
Yes.
Over little things. Mm-hmm. She would stand firm to that. She would hold a grudge and she would not let go. Mm-hmm. So she even made a comment regarding her mom. She was like, if she's on her deathbed, I'm not going to see her. There was some dispute with her mom.
Yeah.
And then Gail and Gina were not on speaking terms.
Yeah.
So when police were going to her family, like, hey, do you have any idea what happened in her last moments or when's the last time you talked to her? And they're like, a couple years ago. It really was not great.
Yeah.
And Gina stated, quote, when she got a hold of those children, it was out of love because she had a love, but she had it in her head. She thought that she could get them when they wasn't mine to give to her. It was like talking to a wall. Mm-hmm. Because when you say something to my sister, she goes in her head and thinks that she can do things the way she wants to do them.
Yeah.
Her finances were also a hot mess. Like, she was not on speaking terms with her family. She technically lost relationships with her family members. Mm-hmm. Her pet parrot flew away.
Yeah.
A few of her pets had died. That was really devastating.
Sure.
She's trying desperately to get these grandkids. She's always wanted kids.
Yeah.
And I think that her sister Gina's spot on in thinking that she's filling some kind of void with these pets. Like, she just has so much love to give and is rescuing pets. But what she really wants are children.
Yeah.
So she's being denied these children. She's absolutely devastated. Stated. And then now her finances, on the other hand, are a complete and total disaster.
Yeah. So in the 1970s, Gail bought a 3-story row house at foreclosure for a mere $500. Now, let me tell you, that is unheard of today. Foreclosure or not, you cannot find a house that's less than $500,000. Truly, it is rough out there.
Yeah,
it is hard. There is nothing. It is just bad and awful, and I hate it. And let's move on. Even if though she was getting in foreclosure, it was still that was a steal. And she lived in that home for like the rest of her life. I believe it is where she ended up being murdered.
Yes.
So it wasn't until about 2003, which was about a year before she retired, you know, definitely on her own and not at all being forced to retire from the police department, that she started to have some very weird behavior involving this house. And let's just keep in mind, this house isn't the most beautiful, you know, renovated, gorgeous home of all time. She got it in foreclosure, but she had lived in it for, at the point of her death, 40 years. Amazing. That's her home. That is her fucking home. Love it. Great. In 2003, like I said, right before she retired, Gail took out her first mortgage. It was for approximately $175,000, which is a lot. Maybe it's not for a mortgage, back then. For now, I don't know how it works. I truly have no idea how buying a house works. It sounds like a lot to me, but I don't know. Then, 3 years later, in roughly 2006, so after she was retired, Gail took out a second mortgage for $357,000, which is a huge jump from the first mortgage, and also very expensive, at least to me. I don't know if that's normal to jump that much, if that was inflation, if that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. So now life took a really weird turn because all of a sudden Gail got married real quick, all of a sudden, no warning. She married a man named Ednilson Felix Cuenca. Now, Ednilson was an undocumented immigrant. He had come over from Brazil. And according to her training officer, Sergeant Gerard Mullen, we mentioned him earlier, he was one of the only nice officers who liked Gail and was good to Gail. The marriage was strictly one of convenience. He said they both had an agenda. They both had what they wanted and they were sticking to it, which is true. Gail wanted a husband so she could look better to adopt her sister's grandchildren. You know, the one that had caused such a monumental tiff between her sister and her. And then Ednilson wanted a green card. Very simple. Very easy. Bada bing, bada boom. That's all. That's it. That's all it took. So the couple were married at Boston City Hall with Sergeant Mullen actually as one of the witnesses. And then Gail went forward and took out a third mortgage on her home, this one being co-signed by Ednilson. This mortgage was for $401,000. And this was only 6 months after she had taken out the second mortgage. I don't know how mortgages work. I will not lie to you. At least in the terms of taking out a mortgage on your house that you already live in. I don't know how that works. I'm currently helping my boyfriend to find a house, but I don't know how it works in this sense. So to have now suddenly she took out one and then two, do they pile up on each other? I don't know. Doesn't matter. That's a lot of money. And to take out one that's over $400,000 after you've taken out one 6 months prior that was $350,000? Holy shit. Holy shit.
And like, same. I don't know how any of this works. Buying a house for me right now, not, and buying a house for most of us, I think right now, not really an option.
No.
Mortgages, we never learned that in school.
No.
Sorry, we were too busy learning about the Pythagorean theorem or whatever.
Yeah.
Before all of you people who own houses come for us and tell us we need to learn about mortgages.
Teach us.
Right. Help.
Like, please.
But everybody, and it's interesting too, because in the articles that I was reading, people who do have understanding of mortgages were also as confused as we are, Liz.
Right.
Which tells me that we're at the right headspace because everybody is looking at this and scratching their heads because she lived on a pretty fixed income mm-hmm. of like roughly $60,000 a year. So how she was able to borrow over $750,000 total was really bizarre. And a Suffolk County land court official also said that this was bizarre and that the last loan she had received for the third mortgage, the $401,000 mortgage, this was discharged 16 days later and they weren't sure where the money went. And like her friends were like, who is this husband that co-signed on this mortgage? And that's really weird. And
yeah,
very soon after the two married, Ednilson moved back to Brazil and left Gail with this mortgage that he had co-signed on.
Yeah. So much for that green card.
Right. Hello.
I don't think he ever came back either.
No, he definitely didn't. And he passed away a couple years after Gail was murdered. I think he passed away in 2014.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like she's just saddled with all this debt now. And it really was not a great financial decision. Mm-hmm. None of these things were good financial decisions. And she was really kind of screwing herself over. And she was probably desperate or needed that money. But not a great, smart financial decision.
No.
And then over the next 4 years, she made just one payment.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't understand debt and any of that in America, because how was she not jailed or anything or chased down for that? I'm not saying she should have been, but like one payment for more than $500,000 in 4 years? Like, why didn't she get in trouble for that?
Right. I wonder if that one payment was to like keep the debt collectors away.
Yeah.
Or like, here, have this one payment, like I'm working on it.
Yeah.
And then they gave her more time.
Yeah.
But then several weeks before she was murdered, her home was foreclosed on.
Which I find ironic considering she bought it at foreclosure. But so, so, so upsetting to her. This was at the end of November 2011. So truly weeks, not even, before she was killed. And of course, this was devastating to her because since she lost her job, let's be real, she lost her job at the police department. She was forcibly retired. Everything had just kind of gone to shit in her life. She lost her family. She lost her pets, like you mentioned. Her sister and her were fighting. She got married to this guy and he disappeared. Now she had all this debt. Her life was not looking great. And then now to lose the house she lived in for so long. It's hard. So when this happened, she just, miserable. But she was trying her best to negotiate with the new buyer. She tried, and she had a plan. She was negotiating with the buyer to live as a tenant on the second floor. That was what she wanted. And it sounded like it might have been heading in that direction, that was going to happen. It seemed promising. Like, okay, maybe we can do this. Maybe.
The day before Gail's murder, she had returned to the Watertown Police Department for her retirement ID. And then after that, she had gone out with some of her old coworkers, some friends. They went to a bar after, had a couple drinks. That same day, she had an appointment at the house in Roxbury with her building's new owner. And this was where she was going to attempt to negotiate a lease to allow her to live as a tenant.
Mm-hmm.
And Gail's cousin, who chooses to remain anonymous, stated, quote, "Well, I spoke to Gail and she was very upset because she was waiting all day for this guy that bought the house to come by to finalize his contract. At 8:30 that night, when I talked to her, he had not come by yet, so she was waiting for him. He's the only person that I know that she was waiting to come by. That's the last I heard from her. And she was found 3 days later dead. But I think she was murdered that night."
Yeah. It's definitely very suspicious that she was waiting and waiting around for someone who bought her house and she wanted to negotiate a lease to still live there. Could that have potentially pissed off a new buyer? Yeah. Would a new buyer leave the mutilated corpse of the person he just bought the house from or foreclosed house from? I don't know if that's really the move. Maybe it was because whoever it was still isn't caught. 13 years later, so maybe it was the move.
And if you really want to get into conspiracies, maybe he wanted to demo the whole building and make a luxury condo building or apartment building or something.
Right.
And this would give him the excuse to do that. Like, who's going to live in a building where someone was murdered?
Right.
Let's knock it down and make luxury apartments instead. I have no idea.
Right.
But Gail's cousin seems to think that this is very suspicious.
I also think it's very suspicious.
Same.
Very.
Gina told WBUR that detectives investigating Gail's murder couldn't find the rental contract between Gail and this new buyer.
Mm-hmm.
When Gail's purse was given to Gina 2 years after her murder, like they're finally giving her and her family the possessions. Gina opens up the side pocket, like a zippered side pocket where you might put like cash or your wallet.
Mm-hmm.
She opens this up and finds the agreement.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah. It's a real top-notch police work there. What great efforts they put into that. 2 years they have that opportunity to open the pocket. It's good work.
Gail's mother, Marilyn, stated, quote, "Who could hate her so much to go into her house and kill her? That's hate. I don't know." Anyone with any information on the murder of Gail Miles is asked to please call the Boston Police Crime Stoppers at 1-800-494-TIPS.
Mm. Obviously, you know, it's been 12, 13 years since she's been murdered, and her case is still, it's still cold, which is upsetting, and you would think that a case involving a police officer, an ex-police officer, would be solved immediately. No, which kind of brings, you know, theories like, I don't have much theories. I think my biggest thought is one of her ex-coworkers one of the police officers from the Watertown Police Department. Sounds most likely, besides the building owner or, you know, the new buyer of this foreclosed house. It just seems all too convenient that that night she was supposed to meet with someone, she was killed. And then, you know, nobody could get a hold of her. And then a few days later, they did a wellness check and found her. I think that's very suspicious. I think it kind of goes with the thought of she opened up her door for him, let him inside, and that's why there was no forced entry or anything crazy like that. And I think that also maybe could have gone with the whole thought of, like, if it was an ex-coworker or somebody she knew. Some people thought maybe it was her husband, Ed Nilsson. I think that's not even really worth much more than mentioning that. I think that's not anything.
No, he was in Brazil at the time.
Yeah.
They looked into him. Obviously, the first place everyone's going to look, we say it all the time on this podcast, look into the boyfriend, look into the husband, look into the significant other.
Mm-hmm.
He is clear.
He's fine. I think it was most likely that buyer. And if it was, they have their name. They had to have. What happened? Did they look into him? Was it like a big corporation, like an LLC flipping a house? Could have been. If they, my thought is they saw that and they got overwhelmed and were like, oh, and then they just didn't look into it more because it was more than one person. Or it could have been an ex-coworker, aka cop, aka what? I don't know what happened. Oh, there's no fingerprints and there's no evidence. So they just turn their heads.
Right. And like, who would know to, well, I guess most people would figure you can wipe down fingerprints, but who would do it with such precision other than a police officer?
Right.
That's my thought. And I think it's a funny little coincidence that the day before she was murdered, she went to the police station, her old police station, got her retirement ID. Hi, everybody.
Remember me?
Yeah. Thought you forgot about me, bitch. Here I am.
Yeah.
And then a couple of them were like, oh, Gail, what's up? Let's go get drinks after. I wonder if someone went there, maybe had a few too many and was pissed.
Yeah.
Or maybe they had a heated conversation. Gail's like, hey, remember when you were grinding up against me? Hey, remember that lawsuit?
Yeah. It's a good point.
You know, some old feelings or emotions were brought up by seeing her and maybe having a couple of drinks. I don't know.
That's a good thought.
But I do think it is a little bit of a quinky-dink. And I also think that even if it wasn't a cop, even if it wasn't this buyer, even if it was just someone who knew Gail from around the neighborhood and she would let them into her house because she was that kind and friendly.
Right.
That her investigation was intentionally handled poorly because the Roxbury Police Department probably heard, like, oh, shit, she's an ex-cop. This is a woman that sued our buddies over at Watertown. You know, she was the one that was raising a stink and was trying to say discrimination and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
Why would we waste our time on this investigation?
Yeah.
So I think that there were a lot of factors in play, and I think that her case was going to be not handled correctly from the beginning.
I think you're absolutely right. She was doomed from the start at no fault of her own. And that is the unfortunately still unsolved murder of Gail Miles. Terrible, terrible stuff. And just, she was just at a terrible disadvantage her whole career and then the rest of her life. And it's just so unfair. She absolutely does deserve justice. I hate that her case was handled so poorly, and I'd like to believe now so much time has passed that it's being handled properly, but it's still unsolved. Breaks your heart. Guys, of course, as always, we want to know what you think about this case. Please send us your thoughts and your theories as to what happened. Do you think it was one of her ex-coworkers? Do you think the buyer of the house is suspicious? Please let us know. You can find us on Instagram at truecrimene,
all lowercase,
and you can send us an email at truecrimene@gmail.com.
We also have a website, truecrimene.com. You can go to our contact page and use our handy-dandy submission tool where you can send us thoughts on this case, other cases we've covered, questions, comments, concerns. And if you guys have cases of your own that you would like to hear us cover, you can be anonymous on there if you so choose. Leave your name if you so choose. And we are always, always, always looking for case suggestions for cases to cover in New England, of course. And yeah, even if you don't do all that, we appreciate you guys being here. We appreciate you guys listening.
Yes, thank you very much. And with that, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Goodbye.